Welcome to Trained, a podcast exploring the cutting edge of holistic fitness. I'm Ryan Flaherty, Senior Director of Performance at Nike. For now, I'm still recording from my home, calling up the world's leading experts in mindset, movement, nutrition, recovery, and sleep to discuss all the ways you can train your body and mind. Today, I'll be zeroing in on nutrition with one of the world's foremost experts on how food intersects with performance, health, and everyday life.
I fundamentally believe that when you're active, when you're getting adequate sleep and you're doing appropriate stress management, that the most important variable in your nutritional day is the caloric intake. How many calories are you getting relative to your needs? Next is the source of those calories. Is it coming from good protein sources and good fruits and vegetable sources, or is it coming from highly processed nutrients and highly processed foods?
That was Dr. John Berardi, the co-founder of Precision Nutrition, breaking down his nutritional philosophy in super simple terms. I've known John for years, and so I can tell you that's one of the things he does best. He untangles all of the conflicting research, new theories, and flavor of the week diets to give no-nonsense advice. He finds ways to put abstract nutritional concepts to work in real life. That's because John is more than just a nutrition coach. He's also a teacher, a writer, and a critical thinker. And he uses those tools to empower others to think and to coach for themselves. So today, we'll be talking about food, but we'll also be talking about how to think about food, how to assess experts and their expertise so you can take control of your own nutrition and your own health. First off, John, thanks for taking the time. I really appreciate you spending the few hours with us.
Yeah, Ryan, it's great to chat with you finally. And absolutely, I appreciate you having me.
You know, you're very well known in the training industry, but would you just mind giving our listeners who aren't familiar with you just a little bit about your background and how you got into what you're doing today?
Yeah, no problem. So yeah, I'm John Berardi and I'm a dual Canadian-American citizen. I grew up in the US and ended up coming to Canada in 2000 to do my PhD work in exercise and nutritional biochemistry. So that's sort of my training, but really fortunate for me when I was a master's student, you know, I was just always so interested in the applied side of things, right?
Yeah.
So I'm learning this stuff in research papers and in the lab and in textbooks. What does it mean? What does it mean to an athlete who's going to go race in the Tour de France, or an athlete who's going to try and push a bobsled down a bobsled track faster than the world's best at that? Every Thursday, I'd go into the bowels of the library where all the latest research was published, and I'd read all that stuff, and then I'd summarize it and write articles about it for strength coaches and for personal trainers. And so that became this thing. And then I just started publishing that information and then people started reading it. And then that led to working with some of the most elite athletes in the world, which was a really cool part of my early career. And then that led to Precision Nutrition, where we said, hey, we're doing all this stuff, but such a small group of people is accessing it. Mm-hmm. What if we can make this available to everyone? So we started out as a coaching company, coaching clients all over the world. Then personal trainers, dietitians, strength coaches were really interested in what we were doing because we were the only company doing coaching at scale. And then sort of the last thing we added to the mix was, you know, we have this coaching program with novel software and a really interesting and different curriculum. Then we have all these professionals being certified. It's over 100,000 now. How do we connect them? Mm. So we launched a software product called ProCoach, which connects the two. So it provides the curriculum and the software tooling to professionals so that they can deliver this proven system with their clients, with them as the coach. So that's really sort of, you know, I don't know, the last 30 years of my life in a nutshell. And, you know, Precision Nutrition's gone on to become the world's largest nutrition education software and coaching company in the world, which is super cool.
Yeah, that's great. Can you talk about the different types of experts in nutrition that are out there? Like, what should listeners be looking for when they're trying to filter through all the nutritional information and expertise that's out there?
The way that I look at this is we as humans fundamentally look in all spaces of our lives for guidance, right? What happens after we die? Geez, I want to look around and find someone who might know. You know what I mean?
Yep.
When I'm alive, how do I live a good life? We look for experts. You can't open up a scientific journal and find the answer about what you should eat, right? So in the absence of that direct instruction manual, we look to other humans. This is baked into us And we have to be very careful with it, because you're just looking at what other humans who maybe have different motives and incentives are telling you, right? One of my favorite things is when people talk about, let's say, which supplements they should take. What's the best supplement to give kids? Mm. They ask questions like that. Here's a better question. What do you give your kids, if anything, right? What does that question tell you? Well, it tells you, what does an expert who's presumably read the body of literature and then had to make a value and risk calculation for the people he loves the most decide? Mm. And so same with athlete nutrition. Not what should a theoretical athlete eat. John Berardi, have you ever worked with an endurance athlete who cycled the Tour de France? Yes. What did you recommend he or she eat? The answer then tells you, when I filtered out all the noise and all my theoretical ideas, what do I do in reality, in practice, with someone who I care about, someone who may be paying me, someone whose own reputation is intimately linked with my own? What do I do when there's stakes? So that's the first thing we have to be super clear about, because when we just Google it up and we find someone who seems to talk a good game, because this is generally how we decide which experts to follow. Do they sound convincing? Right? That's really it. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't know that they went to such and such university. And if we do know they did, we don't know how good their curriculum was or how good of a student. What'd you get at that university? Mm-hmm. A or D, you know? All we're looking for oftentimes is, do you talk good? Do you communicate well? And do some of the things that I think your values might be, the words you say that somehow lead me to believe what your values are, align with mine, which is another danger, right? Because that's a bias that we all have where we're looking for you to validate what I already think and believe. When we so quickly and inherently like an idea, like a person, that often just means it's validating a bias we already have. And we're saying, I like that thing because it makes me feel smart, because I already thought something like that. So that's the first thing. I just think we have to be really careful in our search, in our gravitation toward, and then our attachment to particular experts. That's how I think about expertise very broadly.
I could not agree more. I would love to take in your own advice is, what do you do? What are your foundational principles of nutrition that you apply to your own life with your family that are consistent?
Yeah, totally. Happy to share. And I'll just extend it just slightly beyond the bounds of nutrition too, because that matters, right? Like fundamental for me is sleep. I start with sleep, you know, and not everyone needs the same amount of sleep. I have friends who are PhD sleep experts and, you know, they agree somewhere around 7, 8, whatever. For me, 8.5 hours of sleep is what I get every night. Now, I've always slept a lot, so there's probably something in my genetics. Also, I exercise a lot and I think that influences sleep need, right? And I think your food intake also influences sleep need. I remember when I used to compete for bodybuilding competitions and I would be on a hypocaloric, so low energy intake diet, trying to get really lean for the stage. I only needed 5.5 to 6 a night. I wanted more, you know. It's hard when you're eating too few calories when you're up an extra 2 hours a day. Yeah. You know, you wanted to sleep. Please let me sleep through the hunger.
That's all you could think about, yeah.
But that fundamentally is how I operated when I was eating a hypocaloric diet in an unsustainable way, admittedly. But when I'm in my usual steady state, it's about 8.5 hours of sleep a night. I usually train 6 days a week. For the last 10 years, I've been competing in master's level track and field. This year, tracks are closed and, you know, we have 4 young children. So it's easier just not to go to the track this year, and it's fine with me. So I'm taking a little bit of a break. But generally, you know, I'll be at the track a couple of days a week and then I'll be in the weight room the rest of the time. So then my nutrition is around what I do for those things. Now we have 4 young children. I have less time to cook and eat. So I've just eliminated a meal. So right now I just eat 2 meals a day. Mm-hmm. I skip breakfast in favor of feeding them. And then I eat lunch, which is kind of larger to make up for the calories lost in breakfast. And then I eat dinner. So then my diet is essentially usually around 1 pound of protein. So that could be lean meat or pork or chicken or vegetarian source or whatever the case may be. Usually a humongous bowl, 8 servings of vegetables. And so that's the base. So basically I have for lunch and for dinner. And then usually, you know, I'll train between lunch and dinner. So then after my dinner meal, I still need to get more calories than protein and vegetables. Mm. So I usually have, I call it tongue-in-cheek, my recovery bowl. And what that is, it's like half a pint of dairy-free ice cream because I have lactose intolerance and a milk allergy. And then I put mixed nuts and I put usually cherries or bananas in there and I put some almond butter and I put some dark chocolate. So it's just a very delicious, high calorie bowl of goodness.
That sounds amazing.
I eat it every day I train, you know, okay. So I essentially have ice cream 6 days a week. And then during my training, I usually have an essential amino acid drink with collagen protein and creatine in it.
I love hearing you say that because I think that's something I hear a lot from a lot of successful people, people who are healthy, but you know also have a lot going on in their life, is that they're very consistent in how they eat and they aren't afraid to keep it the same. You obviously sub in and out protein sources, you sub in and out vegetable sources, but The look of your day is pretty much the same. And it's one less thing you got to really kind of think about, you know?
It's true. And you know, at Precision Nutrition and my philosophy has long been this idea of nutrition, health, sleep, exercise, in the context of a real human life. Because mm-hmm. See, what happens now is people get out their theoretical microscope and they go, all right, John Berardi does intermittent fasting. He must be in it for the autophagy, you know? So they start saying research, scientific, theoretical things. And I want to bring it back here for all the listeners. I don't eat breakfast because it's more convenient when I have four children. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, I blew the autophagy. No, that's not what I'm going for. Yeah. Because I fundamentally believe that when you're active, when you're getting adequate sleep and you're doing appropriate stress management, that the most important variable in your nutritional day is the caloric intake. How many calories are you getting relative to your needs? Next is the source of those calories. Is it coming from good protein sources and good fruits and vegetable sources, or is it coming from highly processed nutrients and highly processed foods?
Yeah, thank you for getting so specific on your routines. I appreciate that. And as you mentioned, you're a father of four. I have a two-year-old. So what is your philosophy as a parent when it comes to nutrition?
Feeding our children is this. For breakfast, lunch, and dinner, they eat protein, fruits, and vegetables. That's what we serve. Well, what about healthy grains? Well, they find them. Carbs are found by children, by adults. You know what I mean? They're so ubiquitous. Nearly any snack on the planet
is a carb,
is carbs, right? And I know they're going to find them. You know, we don't keep them out of the house. We just don't put them on the dinner plate, right? And then that way, if they're at a friend's house or between meals, they have snacks. They may have whole grain crackers. You know, they might have various other things. But the idea is if I'm preparing breakfast, lunch, and dinner, I want to be sure that those meals are loaded with the things we know that most people get too little of, proteins, fruits, and veggies. So our house, again, for feeding the children is so easy.
100%. That's something I struggle with all the time. My mom, we ate what was on the table and that was all, everything else in the house, you had to like actually go in and like prepare and make. It wasn't, nothing That's was right. readily available, which was genius on her part. As a kid, miserable. I can't tell you how many nights I complained about the stir fry or the salmon we were having, and I did not want any piece of that. All I wanted was McDonald's or, you know, bean and cheese burrito, but that's all we got. And it was, yes, she struggled through that process, but I thank her every day for that.
Part of the thing for us, too, was that, you know, there's multi-tiered struggles that can happen in a house, right? I mean, how many battles have happened about, hey, now's time for dinner. I'm not hungry now. It doesn't matter. You eat when we eat. You know, so those are the things we're really flexible about. When our kids were little, we put in a butcher's block, which is just like a wooden counter, and we put little kid-sized chairs. And we would put their meals down on that and say, dinner's ready. You can eat it whenever you want. So it was one less battle that we had to have. The battle that I want is eating good food choices, right? And then the other thing there for us has been this. You'll notice that our kids, I post pictures on Instagram and Facebook about this, all eat fruits, vegetables, and protein at every meal. But they're different often, vegetables and fruits. Like our 8-year-old doesn't like certain fruits and vegetables. He doesn't like berries, for example.
Okay.
So he'll eat watermelon and apples. And the other two will eat strawberries, blueberries, and raspberries. And that just took time, right? Presenting over and over again, new fruits, vegetables, new proteins, new fruits, vegetables, proteins. And finally, like homing in on what are the ones that these individual children's want and serving them the ones that they like, you know? So now they eat fruits, vegetables, proteins. So the battle is getting proteins, fruits, vegetables. The particular choice is irrelevant to me. So for me, it's really about making the important one, and the rest being negotiable. So that's how we do mealtime at our house.
I really like that perspective. I would love your take on, why do you think there are so many emotional extremes when it comes to nutrition? What is it about nutrition that causes, you know, the extreme points of view to come out so dramatically, I guess?
I think where there's folks who know things, there will be egos. And when egos are not suitably in check, this is the result, right? I mean, as humans, we are so desperate for significance. We're so desperate for contribution. I mean, these are good things, right? That sometimes we apply them in the wrong dimensions. We're like, hey, this keto thing, I mean, it really seemed to do something for me. And so now I want to share that. And then someone strips away our significance by saying, bah, you know what I mean? Or whatever the polite to rude spectrum of bah is, you know? And then that immediately undermines what we want from the world. So the only recourse is defense, you know? I'm gonna defend. I want significance back. This is fundamentally about a much deeper emotional need for contribution and significance.
Yeah.
So we see it in every space. We see it in nutrition. We see it in training. We see it in our political views across the political spectrum. It's never going to go away on a, let's say, global population level. But on an individual level, each of us can get better.
Yeah.
And I think that's the only place where we can work on ourselves, in our hearts, in our minds, and with our hands. We can work only on ourselves.
100% aligned at that point of view. That's exactly the way I approach as well. And it's the idea too, that everything we know based on, you know, the research that exists out there and the data is that this is all we know today. Up to this point, this is what we know, you know, and in the next 6 months, 10 years, we're going to know more. And we'll tell you that we know more. And it's not a matter of, oh, I'm in 10 years, I'll have something different. I'm telling you because I want to hide the fact that I was wrong 10 years ago. And I always tell my athletes this, if I'm doing the same exact thing 2 years from now, go find somebody else to work with. Cause I am not pushing myself to stay on the forefront of what's happening or testing enough on myself or holding myself accountable to my own programming that I'm willing to change. I think it's super important for all of us to exhibit.
The caveat to that is that if some of the things we're doing aren't the same, that's a problem too.
Yeah,
right? Some things should change.
Yeah.
But like we shouldn't have scrapped the whole thing because the most experienced coaches, it's as if their minds are calm in the eye of the storm. Mm. The eye of the storm being information overload and newness and intrigue and shiny objects, their minds somehow find a way to be calm amid this storm. And so there's a baseline of fundamentals that, you know, the tools may change, but the thing that the tools are trying to achieve stay the same. We know that if you're an active person, you need a baseline of protein. It doesn't matter where you get the protein from generally, but if you're highly active and you're not getting somewhere around 3/4 of a gram to 1 gram per pound of body weight, it's definitely problematic. Humans need protein. They need enough micronutrients. They need enough calories. They need enough essential fats. And if they don't get those, things will start going haywire.
Mm-hmm.
And we see that reliably.
Yeah.
We see that in female athletes, for example, you know, who it used to be called the triad and now it's called REDS and whatever we call it, is this known predictable phenomenon when women train loads of volume and they calorie restrict. They get in a negative energy balance and loads of bad things happen reliably. Bones break, menstrual cycles cease. We know all about this stuff. You know, you can't override the system, you know? So keto, for example, very hot right now, but when you've been in the field for 30 years, like I have, this is the third time you've seen it come and go. And so it's just, I think that's part of what we're talking about too. This idea that when you have experience and you've been in the field for longer, it doesn't make you right. It just allows you have to have seen the cycles, you know, and then new studies come out that validate your pre-existing beliefs. And, you know, the experienced coach goes, oh, yeah, it depends on the athlete and what we're trying to accomplish.
Exactly.
After the break, John and I will get into the do's and don'ts of intermittent fasting and how to give diet buzzwords the squint test. Stick around.
If you're enjoying this episode of Trained, here's some good news. You'll find more wellness expertise every day on the Nike Training Club app. A good place to start is our newest program, Advance with Joe Holder. Using minimal equipment or none at all, the Nike Master Trainer guides you through an 8-week fitness journey designed to take your strength and endurance to the next level. Joe's highly technical approach means you'll focus on form during every workout and get more out of every rep. And NTC offers more than workouts. You'll also find in-depth guidance on mindset, recovery, sleep, and nutrition, including dozens of recipes created with your performance in mind. Download NTC from your app store of choice. You can start training as soon as the episode's over.
So I want to make sure we get a couple of topics we wanted to cover, and you'd been mentioning it, so I think it's a good thing to kind of talk about, which is this idea of, you know, the different types of fasting. Can you talk a little bit about the differences between time-restricted feeding, intermittent fasting, and then potentially like longer fasts, and why people would consider looking at those as a potential tool for themselves, if at all?
You can't answer this question as an individual unless you can do something first. And I call it my squint the eyes test. By squinting our eyes, blurring the edges, blurring the details of life, of things, of diets, of whatever, and looking at the shapes of them. So again, if you look at the details, people talk about, you know, hormones and something that may happen that sounds fancy at the level of the DNA. Mm-hmm. But really what's happening is we are controlling caloric intake. We are saying that if I fast for 5 days, and then I eat whatever I want for 5 days after that, I will probably eat less over that 10-day period than I would have if I would have just eaten whatever I wanted for those 10 days. Mm-hmm. Universally, for the general population who's eating ad libitum, which is just when they're hungry, you can tell them to restrict and whatever, but if you drag out the timeline long enough, people average the same amount of calories generally. So whether you're doing 16-8, which means some portion of the day when I would have otherwise have eaten, I won't. You know, and then I'll eat what I want for the rest of the day, or whether I do 1 day a week of fasting, or whether I fast for many days of the week, we're accomplishing the same thing. That's what happens when we squint our eyes and look at the shapes. Mm. It's just a way of eating less when you normally would have eaten, and maybe eating none when you normally would have eaten, and then relying on the fact that you probably won't double your intake during the times that you are going to choose to eat. So when people fast, they generally eat less. That means that fasting isn't magic. It doesn't do a whole bunch of genetic and hormonal magic tricks. What it does is generally control your intake better than if you were just to rely on controlling it in other ways. I think that any of these forms of fasting can be okay if you take a few things into consideration. One, if you're highly, highly physically active, be very, very careful. If you're highly, highly physically active and you're a woman, be very, very, very careful. Women are much more sensitive to negative energy balance. We talked about it earlier, reds and loss of menstruation and weakening of bones and big hormonal fluctuations and all this kind of stuff. People who exercise a lot, it's a big stressor on top of the normal stresses of life. And then you're going to fast, which introduces another stress. So be very, very careful with it, right? Also, the group of folks that are very beginner at eating healthy, what tends to happen when they do fasting is they develop a bunch of superstitions around it. They don't know cause and effect yet. They haven't tried to eat healthier foods in the past. They're like, well, if I just skip breakfast, then I can eat what I want at lunch and dinner, which doesn't always put you much further ahead from a health continuum unless you just lose a bunch of weight from doing it. Weight loss in itself for a lot of people who are overweight to obese is a health factor. It helps them lower their cholesterol and better control their blood sugars. And if they're diabetic or pre-diabetic, it brings that in line. So weight loss is pretty good from that perspective, but it can get too far. So there's just a bunch of things to be careful about.
So in your opinion, who should be trying intermittent fasting?
Let's say you exercise recreationally. You have some experience with, you know, healthy eating and exercise interventions. You don't have a history of disordered eating. Intermittent fasting can be a great experiment to try under those conditions. And I say experiment and I say try. When you do experiments, you measure things and see how it's going. And if it's going badly, you change the experiment. Those are the conditions, you know? And if you don't know which category you fall into, if you're out there listening, get help. Just find someone who knows. Get a nutrition mentor to coach you through it. It's not as expensive as, say, a personal trainer is or whatever, and it can really save you a lot of hassle, a lot of unnecessary trial and error. So if you're not sure who you are and how you fit into all this, just get some help.
Yeah, absolutely.
The sweet spot for me for intermittent fasting is, one, once you have some experience with regular exercise and making healthier eating choices and trying to control your calories without skipping whole meals, once you have a little bit of that experience, now you can go into something like fasting with a healthier perspective, less likely to develop disordered eating, less likely to develop a bunch of superstitions. Mm-hmm. So that's part one. Then the other thing is, if you're an elite athlete trying to force adaptation or trying to keep up with an immensely demanding competition schedule or season, no, it's not a great idea. If you're off season and you have to do some weight control and you're an athlete, fine, it's fine. Your training volume or your competition volume is maybe lower, and then you can get away with fewer calories.
Yeah. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the concept of reverse dieting, kind of the flip of the coin. Can you just talk a little bit about the concept of reverse dieting and some of the basic foundations of it?
Yeah, I like reverse dieting. I think it's smart, but it also gives me a platform to talk about one of my pet peeves, which is the fetishization of simple things.
Yeah.
Reverse dieting is a simple thing. It's, I have eaten a calorie-restricted diet for X period of time, rather than when that diet is over, just going back to normal eating, which doesn't make any sense even logically, right? Like, hey, I've been exercising more, I've been eating far fewer calories. Now on some arbitrarily selected day, I'm going to cut my exercise and eat a ton more. What do you think's going to happen? Of course, what's going to happen happens, right?
Yeah.
So the logical thing would be to apply a method of discipline to the process of refeeding. So if I normally eat 2,500 calories and I've been eating 1,500, to slowly, gradually add more calories in over time until I work my way back up to the 2,500, which is theoretically my maintenance or whatever. But instead of just some simple, sensical concept, we have to call it something, mm-hmm. reverse dieting. It has to be a thing that's very distinct from the other things I can do. I mean, are you reverse dieting? I heard about reverse dieting. Should I try reverse dieting? No, the only reasonable thing to do is what reverse dieting is. But the biggest reason to do it is the discipline aspect. Mm-hmm. With no plan, a dieted human who's got all these signals and urges to eat will never do this slowly. Never. And that's why you use like a programmed approach to introduce the calories again.
Yeah. There's obviously like tools and tricks of the trade to get to that point. We're always looking for that quick answer to our whole, all our problems. And it's consistency. It's just finding something that consistently works for you over a long period of time and doesn't attribute to any mental health issues.
That's right. One of the things I learned a long time ago is that if you work out enough, if you exercise enough, sleep enough, manage stress well enough, your body just asks for the right amount of food. It's trivializing the research here, but you'll eat the right amount of food without gaining too much fat or without eating so little that you start wasting away. But that mechanism only works if you're physically active enough, if you sleep enough, and if you manage stress well enough.
Mm. Yeah, I love that. And it's something I've been working on more with some of my athletes, not only just in nutrition, you know, but in even training, you know, getting them to connect their mind with their body, you know, when we're training in a specific muscle group or really connecting with that muscle, feeling that muscle fire, of just being more mindful within the exercise rather than us chatting or distracted in the music or having conversation that's not getting, you know, out of their head and into their body. I've noticed that. And even when I eat, like more of a mindful approach to eating, when you start to tap into that, you can trust yourself to know that you're going to make the right decision for yourself. But it's to your point, I think when you have too many inputs or too many alarms going off, it's difficult to really be able to hear what your body's asking you.
Yeah. And that's why in the Precision Nutrition Coaching Program, for example, the first two nutrition habits are around paying attention. So the first one is to slow down your eating. And so people lose their minds. They come in the program, they're like, how come you're not telling me what to eat? Because it doesn't matter yet, right? Whatever you were eating before, even if you're mad at yourself about it, eat that, but just slow down so that we can have that interaction, right? And let's be aware of what's happening and what are the sensations I'm feeling. And it's often very difficult for people because they use food to dampen the sensations in their lives, to not hear them. And so we have to coach through that, right? And then the second practice is, okay, cool. Now that you've slowed down your eating for a few weeks, And then the next one is eat until satisfied instead of stuffed. It's tuning in. What is satisfied? What is full? What is stuffed? What is not enough? How do I feel between meals when I have each of those? So we train this awareness. The idea of eating intuitively as a buzzword is nonsensical because no one can eat intuitively without exercise and training and practice. Until you practice things, you can't get this concept. And that's why a lot of people, as I tried intuitive eating, it didn't work for me. So I need a plan. Mm. No, you didn't try intuitive eating because you never had any coaching. You never did any daily practices around it. You were just like, what do I feel like eating today? I'm listening to my body. Well, you can't hear your body yet, right? Mm-hmm. So to your point, right? Doing that with your athletes in the gym, fantastic. Doing it when it comes to meals, fantastic. You know, this self-awareness mm-hmm. is really what we're driving towards, right?
Absolutely. Thank you for this. I could talk to you for hours. I really appreciate it. And, you know, it was great seeing you. And thanks for hanging out with us.
Yeah, thank you, Ryan. I appreciate it. And thanks to everyone who listened. I hope you got a lot out of the conversation.
You heard it here first. John Berardi, renowned nutritional expert, eats ice cream 6 days a week. Okay, dairy-free ice cream, but still, it's ice cream. But I think this highlights something important about his philosophy, that he never looks at nutrition in a vacuum. He looks at all the ways it's interconnected with training, work, and even family life. And since he trains hard for track and field 6 days a week, he turns to ice cream to get more caloric bang for his buck. For John, there's no ideal diet. And beyond basics like protein and vegetables, he believes how you live should shape the way you eat, and that how you eat can absolutely change the way you live. Next up, we've got a really special episode. I'll be talking with three experts who are driving the conversation on all the ways you can feel physically and mentally healthier through pregnancy, birth, and postpartum. This has been Trained. Talk to you soon. If you've enjoyed this episode of Trained, help us spread the word by rating and reviewing the podcast. That way we can keep making great episodes for you to listen to. And it helps other people find us too. If you've got a question for me or my guests, or a topic you'd like to see covered, email me at trained@nike.com. And I'll see what I can do.
Thanks for listening to Trained. Just a reminder, always talk with your doctor before starting any training or nutrition program. The information we provide, it's not a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. And the individual opinions expressed here are just that, opinions. They shouldn't be taken as fact.